Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with author and lecturer Stuart Wild. He's the author of many books, including Silent Power. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one on the Brooklyn Downtown Star by Heather Senison. Battle over fluoride returns. It's actually been nearly 2 years, I believe, since the proposal New York City Councilman Peter Vallone proposed. The dispute over fluoride will continue for another year, with Councilman Peter Vallone Jr. hosting a day of activities at City Hall on May 15th to announce the introduction of legislation to ban adding the chemical to the city's drinking water. Fluoride was added to the city's drinking water at a level between 0.7 and 1.2 milligrams per liter in 1962, or at least that's what they're telling us. A state law was passed in recent years, however, that gave local jurisdictions in New York the ability to decide whether to keep the chemical. Vallone, who represents Astoria, said he's introducing legislation to ban fluoride because the city shouldn't self-medicate its residents. He recommended those who are concerned about fluoride poisoning purchase water filters for their faucet. And I'm pretty sure about this. Water filters will not filter out fluoride. It's a very small molecule. You need to install a reverse osmosis system, which can be expensive. And just to remind everyone that New York City spends roughly $25 million per year adding fluoride to its water, according to the Department of Health. And to take it a step further, reminding you of the past interviews with Dr. Paul Connett, we were talking about trucks that drive up from phosphate fertilizer industries in the South full of fluoride because of the poison these trucks are carrying. The Department of Homeland Security has designated these trucks targets for terrorism, yet it's being dumped into city drinking water. City Council member Peter Vallone will host a rally on the steps of City Hall at 11 a.m. on May 15th to further discuss the proposal to remove sodium fluoride, the added industrial waste that costs the city $25 million a year, treating people internally of all shapes and sizes with sodium fluoride and industrial waste coming from the fertilizer industry. Here's another story. Britain's legendary punk outfit, the Sex Pistols, is reportedly just as rebellious after all these years. According to The Guardian, the band said a curt no thanks to London Olympics organizers who asked them to participate in a commemorative closing ceremony. Don't you think that John Lydon really knows what's up, what the 2012 Olympics really are about? We're going to talk with Matthew Deleuze in the coming weeks about exactly that. Here's another story. Joni Mitchell to quit music to help Morgellon sufferers. Legendary singer-songwriter Joni Mitchell had said she's trying to quit the music business to help out sufferers of Morgellon's disease, an illness she first publicly admitted to having in 2010. She says, "Two nights ago I went out for the first time since December 23rd. I don't look so bad under incandescent light, but I look scary under daylight," she said in an interview with the Los Angeles Times. "What is going on here, I wonder? What do you mean she looks scary? I have no idea what she looks like now." In America, the Morgellons is always diagnosed as a delusion of parasites, and they send you to a psychiatrist, she added later. "I'm actually trying to get out of the music business to battle for Morgellon sufferers, to receive the credibility that's owed to them." Joni Mitchell has had an illustrious career beginning in the late 60s folk scene. Her 1971 album Blue is considered to be one of the great masterpieces of folk music. Through her career, she's performed with a number of people and became immersed in the Laurel Canyon scene, which was taking place in the Hollywood Hills. I'm trying to understand what she means. "I don't look so bad under incandescent light, but I look scary under daylight." If you've ever seen the effects of Morgellon's disease on the skin, just put it into a search engine and check images. I don't think this wonderful singer-songwriter is connecting this disease with the aerosol operations. I'm not sure. If you look at the work of Clifford Carnicom and the people who help him, the connection is made very clearly. We looked at the work of Matthew Deleuze, and to summarize it, he says, hypnotism and symbolism are used to spiritually imprison and control the collective subconscious of the human race, the human energy that would naturally cycle back into and feed the planet is siphoned off, breaking the human energetic relationship with the planet. This all connects back to the last five guests on the show, in how the structures exist in our landscape and through history for the fleecing of spiritual energy to occur. We talk with author and metaphysical lecturer Stuart Wild. He's the author of 20 books, including Silent Power. A book we're going to focus in on, Silent Power, is a guide to help you stop giving away your power. Stuart Wild is also trained to perceive outside of the five-sense reality, a spiritual dimension that follows Stephen Hawking's theory of transverse waves of light. This also may be important to understand why Matthew Deleuze says in order for these mass ritual ceremonies to work, humans must willfully participate. Stuart, welcome to In Other News.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it certainly is a pleasure to have you on because I think the listeners will be quite interested. If they don't know who you are, they can look up your material during this interview. But I wanted to get into something that connects to the past few shows, and that is your book, Silent Power. Can you tell listeners why you wrote that book?
Well, I wanted to sort of show people that they have this sort of deep resonant energy, you know, the etheric life force. And provided they don't get sucked into sort of fear and emotion and recrimination and judgment and so on, they can silently walk through the world developing this power. It's an inner light, and it's expressed off the body. The etheric goes off the body about 18 inches to 2 feet, and then sometimes it can travel across a room. But it's easily visible in a subdued light. And so I was sort of trying to get people to see that they have an energy body over and above their physical body, mind, emotion, and that they could learn to rest inside of it, inside the calm of it, and they could use this life force field to protect themselves from incoming negative influences.
You write about stop leaning and seeking approval.
Yes.
And very few people understand that dynamic.
Well, it's quite a simple concept that you can understand in relationships, say. So if a guy's chasing after a girl and he's all over her like a hot rash, she'll get nauseated with him. You know, she only wants people that don't want her. She doesn't want some guy all over her. Here's the chocolates, here's the flowers, how's your mom and dad? And that's leaning. You know, when you lean over things emotionally, let's say chasing money, it kind of hops up the road in front of you. And if you lean over the girl that you love, you know, you've got to give her the space to be an independent person and decide whether she wants you or doesn't want you. And so that sort of pushing for stuff, it doesn't really work because in the emotional push, you tend to drive the very thing that you want away from yourself.
Right. And you said, you write about there's emotional leaning and then there's psychic leaning.
Yeah, psychic leaning is kind of like psychic attack. You know, you're going to attack them if they don't want you, or you're going to try to attack the situation or the boss at work or the co-workers. And then the emotional leaning is just this, what I call a wet lick in the ear. You know, you're all over them. Like a hot rash, and it nauseates them, and they feel the emotion, and they can't cope, and they run away, or they lean back when you lean in. So it's not the way to get things. What I tell people is stand straight, be unemotional, and be at one and at peace with your energy, and allow things to come to you, and be prepared and understand that certain times the things you want aren't going to come to you.
That's true, and you say stand straight etherically.
Stand straight, yeah. Don't lean.
What does that look like, and how does it affect others when you're standing straight etherically?
When a person has a very strong resonant energy, the first thing is they have calm. and they have silence in their life because you need silence to connect to that inner power. And, you know, they don't run, they don't rush, they're not out of control. And even when they're faced with problems, they're working on the solution of the problems. They're not buying the emotion, you know. So I say in my books, you know, go for the solution, buy the solution, not the emotion. And look and calculate and work out what is your strongest move given the problem you face. So whatever that thing might be. So essentially, is those sorts of people have like a very deep calm. And they're very strong. You can't attack them. You can't bash them up. You can't move them because essentially they've gone past wanting things. When you don't want many things, then it's difficult to move you. Most people are moved by money and sex and emotion and power and, ego trips, self-importance, whatever else. But if a person's very calm and they've processed those shadow traits out of their psychology, then you can't move them with money. You can't move them with promises of sex. You can't butter them up emotionally and play to their self-importance because they're humble and they don't have any self-importance. So then those people are sort of they're unstoppable because they have no emotions about the things. They're not involved. They're not involved in seeking approval. They're not involved in seeking attention. They're not involved in pretending to be right. And I say in my books, agree to be wrong and agree to be last. Don't bother to compete. If you're playing a game of football, allow the others to win. If you're, on a chessboard, make some silly moves and make sure your opponent beats you. And that way, you don't have to win and you don't have to be first. You can just be very humble and very quiet and agree to be last. And that's a central tenet of my philosophy. Of course, it's very odd for most people to hear that because, they want to achieve things and they want to be noticed and glamour and TV and whatever else, and they want to be first and they want to be better than and so forth. But all of that is a sort of hell world that people place themselves into, attempting to achieve certain goals and certain status rungs on a ladder and stuff, and the most of it's completely irrelevant. It's got nothing to do with your soul and your spirituality and who you really are.
You're right, that philosophy it's counterintuitive. And
it's totally counterintuitive.
And I wondered if you do have any examples of those types of people in your life that you recognize that they're at this point, and
yeah, well, there are many that I've trained, many, but they're not sort of somebody that's famous on TV and so forth. They're just people that I've trained over the years, and there are many of them, and of course they do exude a natural beauty. A lot of them look very much younger than their years because the light sustains them and heals them, and they have this calm, and a lot of them are very busy doing things, in the inner worlds or even in the outer worlds, and some of them are very wealthy and some of them aren't, but they don't make a point of it. They wouldn't show any of it off. They just keep very silent inside themselves, and they're connected to the light, they're connected to the power, but they're not connected to sort of the egotistical glory of it.
I noticed that when you're describing the philosophy of letting other people win and letting other people shine, I suppose, but you also mentioned that in the context of communicating with people and allowing people to talk.
Yes, that's the whole secret to life. They talk, you listen. A lot of people, when you meet them, they cannot stop talking about themselves. And I know lots of famous New Age teachers that are like that. They're just waffling on about their magnificence. And of course, when you're listening to that, you can be polite and you listen, but it just bores you stupid. It's like watching paint dry. Essentially, what you have to do is talk to people and ask them questions and allow them to talk, and see what way you might advise them or help them or, relate to them, know them better and so forth. But the whole sort of ego trip of talking about yourself and your achievements. And it must be so boring for girls as well, because they sit there listening to some jock at the bar telling her how magnificent he is. And it must put her to sleep. And of course, the trick is to shut up and ask her questions and get her to talk about her life, and that will empower her. You get a much better chance if you can get her talking about herself rather than you talking about yourself. They're all simple things. They're all so utterly, utterly simple. There's nothing to it. Hey, keep quiet and ask the other person questions and relate to them and look them in the eye and try to discover, who is this soul, this gentle soul that's walking through the earth plane that I've bumped into in the cat's meow bar, whatever. Like, discover the other people rather than trying to sell yourself,
A lot of people, I think, are beginning to understand this type of, counterintuitive philosophy or a way to approach life in general and communicate with others.
Yes.
Your book, Silent Power, was very important for me to discover that. And I was mentioning to you earlier that once I read the book,
yes,
I'd have it and I'd tell somebody about it and, you know, they'd want to borrow it. And so
yes,
I never got it back and I'd have to get another one.
Sorry, we'd have to get you another complimentary copy.
That's a good sign for a book. And, of course, that person then loaned it to somebody else and so on, and it went on its path. It's gone. Somebody else has that very same book and is using it and learning from it. That's always an indicator of a very good book to me that's helping people directly.
Yes.
And that's one of 20 books that you've written and put together. And another one that connects sort of to Silent Power a little bit is Whispering Winds of Change.
Yes.
In that you describe some of the research of particle waves and the etheric body. Can you describe the laws of quantum physics in which the subatomic particle borrows energy and how that applies etherically?
Well, you know, that's a whole thesis on quantum leaps of energy. But essentially, in the particle world, you have the hazy state and you have the solid state. So when particles are being observed, they're in a solid state. And when they're not being observed, they're in a hazy state. And the human body is the same. In a subdued light, you can see human bodies disappear, completely dematerialize. And the first time I saw it was in 2005. And I was around a campfire in Brazil on the coast near Itacaré. And there was a gentleman there, and I could see him morphing in and out. He was sort of there, not there, there, not there. And eventually he blipped out completely. But he was smoking a cigarette that didn't blip out. And so as he walked around the campfire, around the lawn, I could see exactly where he was by the glowing cigarette. And when he lifted the cigarette to his mouth and took a puff, I could see it glow, and then he'd put it back down again. He'd drop his arm again. And that was the first time that I ever really saw a human being go into their hazy wave state. But since then, myself and others, we've seen it 1,000 times. So it's a fact. Humans are solid and they're not solid. So they're an energy body that's held together by their identity, by their thought forms and their emotions and feelings. But it's also an energy body inside the life force, the etheric, inside their light. And they can easily move into a non-solid state. So that isn't sort of generally accepted in the quantum world, because the quantum world only deals with minute little particles. But we can see it here in the physical plane, watching people dematerialize. And it's then our sort of assumption that it's just an extension of quantum physics. But we can't say that exactly and precisely, because we can't write out the mathematical codes and formulas that would describe how a human completely dematerializes, or an animal. But we've seen it so many times. And when I say we've seen it 1,000 times, it's probably we've seen it 5,000 times. I just don't know, because we stopped counting after the first few times. But humans can dematerialize, completely disappear right in front of your eyes. And all they're doing is, it's not like they're not there. They're still there.
Okay.
Like the man on the lawn with a cigarette was still on the lawn with his cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't see them because they go into a hazy wave state.
You said that it's based on somebody observing this?
Yes. Well, see, I mean, normally particles go solid when they're observed. And when they're not observed, they stay in a hazy wave state. But as you're watching this person, he goes solid, and then somehow some flip takes place, and he goes into hazy wave, and you can't see him. And that's the process that we've watched over the years. Like the other night, I was sitting on my bed, and I was watching this light go down my legs, I mean, flashing light. And then I looked down, and I couldn't see my feet, like my feet had dematerialized. So, like, I'm, what, like 2.5 feet or 3 feet away from my feet, and they're not there. And I'm looking at it thinking, oh, this is so cool. And I thought, well, if I stand up, will I fall over or not? But, of course, your feet are still there. It's just you can't see them. So when I stood up to walk over to the basin, I could walk across from my bed to the basin just fine. But I couldn't actually see my feet for a while. And so there's so much about our human evolution and the mind and the body and the soul and the metaphysics and the spirituality and the life force field, the etheric wave, that we don't know. And we've been attempting over the years to discover it. And how we discover it is we go into trance and watch visions and bits of it are explained to us.
Mm-hmm.
But the human evolution is glorious. It's very complicated compared to the sort of day-to-day mundane stuff of going to work, pay the rent, you know, dinner with a mother-in-law, yawn.
Right.
You know, it's way, way more exciting than that.
It reminds me of in that documentary, The Pyramid Code, they mentioned that the Dogon civilization, their scientists knew that when you put your attention on an object, it changes from waveform to particles.
Yeah, well, that's true. And, of course, the Dogon were famous for knowing that Sirius had a second star next to it, didn't they? And that's really the sort of thing that people know the most about the Dogon. But, yes, I mean, I think there have been very advanced civilizations on Earth and very advanced cultures that we really know very little about. But, you know, when they find these sort of batteries in Persia that are 5,000 years old, you start thinking, and blows your mind, you think, a battery that's 5,000 years old, well, what were they doing with it? Well, they were making electricity with it, and then what did they do with that? Well, I don't know, maybe they lit cities and ran their cars and played on their iPhones, you know, who knows?
We talk about this on the show that we've been cut off right now, I guess, at this point, and one guest said that we're sort of at the bottom of the wheel coming back up toward a golden age. And at this point, it's one of the darker points in, I guess, in human history.
Yes, yes. And I mean, the Hindus call it the Kali Yuga, you know. It's like the thousands of years of darkness before the next age, whose name I can't quite remember. You know, we go back into an age of light and an age of enlightenment.
So here we are. We have all these aerosol planes spraying whatever in the sky, and I just think, one guest mentioned that it scatters our energy, and it scatters our connection to the natural telluric energy of the planet.
Definitely. Now, I have a friend who's a doctor in Washington State. She was telling me that after the aerosol planes come over hot and heavy at the weekend, her surgery will be absolutely ram-jam full of people with respiratory problems, especially the older citizens. And she said she could link it to, like, how much activity was going on over the town at the weekend for Monday morning when the people rocked up at the surgery, you know. So that stuff definitely affects you.
Oh, it definitely does, these particles. Yeah. I agree with that. It's a very interesting time that we're living in, and I think your work is very critical for people to understand. And
thank you very much. Well, people can follow my work on stuartwild.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's S-T-U-A-R-T. And, you know, I mean, I try to sort of not get too technical or too complicated, and I try to keep it, you know, funny and human and so forth. But, yeah, there's lots of things that I'm worried about. Like, for example, at the moment, I'm very worried about avian flu because I've seen, like, endless visions of it, endless. It's something that will be introduced, you know, into the population to reduce the numbers, I suppose, because, like, if you're in debt, one of the ways to resolve the debt a little bit anyway is to get rid of all the old people, because you're not going to have to pay them pensions and Medicare and good stuff because they're going to be dead. So you can see how, like, it's a sort of debt reduction plan, really, avian flu.
People discuss that a lot on this radio station.
Yes, well, you might have some, you know, real experts and so on, but, of course, in the past, avian flu wouldn't transmute from human to human. But there's a new variant of avian flu, which the conspiracy theorists say was upgraded in Holland. It was sent from America to Holland to be upgraded. I have no idea if that's true or not. But anyway, there's a new variant of it that can go from human to human. So they need a human to human virus, because otherwise it isn't going to propagate across the world.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that a friend of mine was recovering from surgery from a heart attack. He was in his mid-60s. He's alive. And in the room, the bed that he was in was positioned so that the back of the bed was pushed back into a corner so he could see the three corners of the room. And in each corner, he mentioned to me that he saw small women dressed in white standing still in the corners. And they were adult women, but maybe about 3 feet tall and proportioned. And the nurse would come in and he would ask her, "Do you see these women? Who are these women here?"
"Yeah."
"Sir, there's no one here."
"All right."
And they didn't move. They just stood there.
Yeah.
And it made me think about what you often write about, is seeing these types of beings around from very large. Are they around us all the time?
Yes, they are. I mean, I think the sort of beautiful energies, like these women who obviously must have been healers or protectors, their ability to appear and disappear is predicated on the level of demonic influences that are around the hospital or the bed or the patient or the family of the patient and so forth. But generally speaking, when you see little people, they're in fact very, very large. And there's a sort of race of inner beings or a tribe of inner beings that I call tall boys. And the tall boys are like maybe 12 foot tall. They're all very, very good looking. They could all be supermodels, you know, in the male supermodel world.
Wow.
And but they're very elusive. They're not like every day. They're not around every day. But a lot of the little 3 foot beings are in fact 12 foot tall. But it's like looking at them. You know when you reverse a telescope and you look down at the wrong end and everything looks tiny and small?
Mm-hmm.
It's an optical illusion. Their 3 feet is an optical illusion. In fact, they're probably 12 to 15 feet tall.
Oh, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
You teach your students to be able to see these apparitions so that it happens naturally. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
Well, essentially, it's done through calm and it's done through mastering sort of the trance state. So I'd take them to a seminar room and I'd run them through these trance states and use a few little techniques. For example, if you suddenly make a very large noise when people are in trance, they fire as a reaction to the noise. Their mind momentarily kind of goes out to lunch because it's like, ah, what happened? And then they fire deep inside themselves in these inner worlds. And so that's a technique that I've used over the years. But essentially, it's through meditation and trance. And then I've been a great advocate of ayahuasca. It's the Brazilian brew that comes from the Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's a visionary vine that McKenna and Luis Luna first wrote about it in the 1970s. And so we've run ayahuasca sessions in Brazil, Colombia, and Ecuador, and in Holland as well, where it's legal. And it has DMT in it, which is the sort of what they call the spirit molecule. It's the visionary molecule. And DMT is natural in the body. It's not really a drug. People say, well, it's a drug. It's not really a drug. It's more like a supplement because you've already got DMT in your system. So some of the people have become visionaries because they went to the ayahuasca. And other people became visionaries because they used these meditative techniques. And some people just become visionaries naturally because of a sense of sacredness, a sense of calm, a sense of sort of Taoist detachment, a sense of humility. And then the visions start to come. It's almost like the inner world wants the person to know. And providing they have a sort of celestial energy, they'll be shown. I mean, I've met lots of people like that. I mean, 500, 1,000, maybe more.
Hmm. Stuart, how important is it to be able to see these spiritual dimensions and the etheric body? And do we need to see this?
Well, certain people don't have an evolution in that direction, and that's not a high or a low or good or bad. It's just, hey, some people are going to be growing rice in a field, and other people are going to be, I don't know, working on their computers, you know? No, there's no absolute need for anybody to see it at all. But when you look at the body of knowledge that came through the theosophists and the New Age and philosophers and writers and Aldous Huxley and that sort of stuff, you know, it only went to a certain place. And then after that, it had to go past there. And what myself and some of the visionaries have attempted to do is to develop a new theology, you know, like almost like, well, it's not a religion, but it's a way of understanding life by adding in the inner worlds to the outer worlds. Because everything that happens in the inner worlds happens in the outer worlds sooner or later. So it's only for people that kind of want to evolve, and they've got to be able to sort of withstand the fact that there are a lot of beings, demonic beings, that are going to try to make sure that they don't evolve or that are going to fire, you know, misinformation at them and so forth. So, you know, it's not for everybody, and then it's for some, and then some people are so exhilarated by it that they make it their life.
We talk about the demonic beings a little bit and their work. It seems to be ramped up right now, especially as we're at the darkest point, and do you see a lot of this demonic work escalating?
Yes, I do. And of course, one of the things that over the years I've managed to do is by going into trance, I found that I could enter into the hell worlds and that I could fight in there. So one night I was in those worlds and I saw these thorns on my hands, like cactus thorns. And I thought, what are they for? And I heard point and shoot, and I fired a thorn at a ghoul in the distance. And a little purple light flew off my fingers in a curved trajectory and hit the ghoul. And so I've done a lot of that inner world work down there, fighting against the ghouls. I've been doing it for a long time, and there's others that specialize in it. We call them a lunar fighters because a lunar is the word that they use in South American shamanism to describe the spirit world. And it actually means in Spanish of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the reflective world, the mirror world, the moon world. And yeah, the demonic influences are going to go absolutely nuts because people are scared. And you see the rise of fascism, you know, in the United States legislature, for example. You know, you see this whole sort of demonic control of the world. So it's like the devil's last hurrah. You know, this is where the devil has a little bit of a prance about prior to getting completely rubbed out.
You mentioned that you, in your blog, I've seen from time to time that you do see these UFOs and unidentified flying objects.
Yes, yes. No, I see that all the time. Yes, yes.
Can you tell listeners what it is you're seeing, or and what your impression is?
When you're looking at it in certain circumstances, the sky is full of flying blobs, and sometimes they look like oil barrels, flying oil barrels. Sometimes they can look like a walking stick. Sometimes they can be saucer-shaped, triangular-shaped. Sometimes they mimic planes. They're basically blobs, you know. They look like sort of flying sewage.
Right.
They're part of the demonic world, and they have an enormous influence because they can get inside the minds of humanity. So over the years, I've had quite a few encounters with them and quite a few fights with them. And then just recently, they haven't appeared for a while, but that doesn't mean they're not appearing in South America or wherever they might happen to be. They are just one species, let's say, of demonic entities. Now, there's other demonic entities in the hell worlds that are like very mechanical looking. They sort of look like they're made of metal, and we call them the clunkers. And then there's another sort of species of sort of half man, half goat. There's a myriad of, there's many species in the hell world as there is species on Earth. So they're all linked, but the UFOs are essentially inner world beings. And they can mimic a solid plane. They can mimic anything, you know. So they're kind of dangerous, but they do exercise an influence over humanity because they can get into the mind of those people that are directing the industrial military machine and have them push for this and push for that and so forth. So, yeah, they're not good. And, of course, people who become fascinated by them actually become possessed by them. And so they go through a sort of an abduction process whereby the mind of the person is gradually taken away because they want to capture souls for their own, glory and betterment and whatever they do with them, you know?
I think you're right about that. That's very fascinating. These things are around us.
Oh, definitely. You know, and the demonic entities, they can mimic your father, your mother, your lover, your brother, your sister, a pop star that you're fond of. They can mimic anything. They can morph in and con you into thinking you're talking to your dead uncle. Do you follow me? I mean, they've got enormous power against us, you know. They can even they can quicken your heartbeat. You know, they can create various physiological symptoms in your body. And they can make you see things that are not there. I mean, they have a lot of power because they're like a secret. I call them the devil's air force, which is sort of a bit dippy, but it's like as a way of saying they've got powers, you know.
Have they messed with you at all?
Yes, oh yes, they've been attacking for years. I mean, I've been under attack for 11 years. But now I've built such a strength that they can't get close. But yeah, they would try it if they could, but they can't, you know.
There are more beings out there than just these things flying around.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, look, there are millions, or it's estimated, or it's postulated, that there are millions of Earth-like planets just in our galaxy alone. So all those planets may very well have civilizations that are real, like what we would consider alien civilizations, but they probably look very human or very close to human, because the DNA that works on a planet Earth has to be more or less the same DNA that works on a different planet. However, it's very unlikely that they're more evolved than us, because they couldn't have started any sooner than us, because the whole thing started more or less at the same time. So there are space brothers and sisters out there, but whether or not they have the technology to reach Earth is very unlikely, because we don't have the technology to reach them. But these guys, they're pretending to be like space brothers, and they're here because of the ecology and la la la. Of course, it's a bunch of rubbish.
I think you're right about that.
I've worked a lot, or quite a lot, on demonic possessions, where a person's mind isn't like swamped by the devilish forces, and they start to go kind of gaga, and they make you do things, sit down, stand up, make a left, make a right, stop, breathe, you know, whistle, sit down again, make a left, make a right, you know. It's like the person's mind is not their own. And I've worked on, I think, 40. Essentially, I say prayers over the person, and I put my hands on their head, and I scare the ghouls out. But it's very prevalent, and, you know, Professor Mack wrote that wonderful book on alien abduction.
Yes.
And everybody thought it was all a bit dippy, but in fact, you know, for the most part, he was completely right. He was completely right as to how these entities attempt to capture the soul or the etheric life force, you know, because they use our life force as food. And so they want people to sort of submit to their phony technologies. But their technologies is always a load of rubbish. I mean, they don't know anything, you know. They're thick as two planks, but they do have power, you know.
That's why I think when you describe what the etheric human etheric energy looks like,
yes.
and how important it is to begin to understand our human energy and what that is, begins to create a protection around us.
Definitely. It's definitely. You know, the more evolved a person becomes, the more protected they are. They only have to sort of start to meditate and stay silent and study a bit and so forth, and the power grows very, very quickly. But they also have to process their shadow, so they have to process their own evil. And, of course, that's where a lot of people aren't willing to go very far because, you know, but, I mean, essentially you need humility, you need grace, you need tenderness, you need respect, you need kindness, extraordinary levels of kindness, and gradually your life will grow very fast.
Stuart Wilde, thank you very much for being on Another News.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Stuart Wilde was traveling and he couldn't take calls. But if you have any questions or comments about this interview, you can call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. That's Sinead O'Connor. Just Call Me Joe, Lion and Cobra is the album. And our guest is traveling, so he's not joining us, but we'll take calls. That's Stuart Wilde is the guest, and he's the author of many books, but you can check it out on stuartwilde.com. And he spells his first name S-T-U-A-R-T, and Wilde is W-I-L-D-E. We'll go to the first call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
I found the, only caught the last part of the interview, but I found it highly interesting. And just wanted to comment, it's Stuart Wilde, is that one word?
The website is Stuart Wilde, one word, yes, .com.
StuartWilde.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's basically my question. Also, I had a question that actually would be for the author. I don't know that anyone else could really answer it. Maybe I'll put it to him on the website.
Great.
But thank you for the program. I found it very interesting.
You bet. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Oh, we got to hang up? Okay.
Hello, Ben Exa. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm driving. I'm going to pull over the side of the street.
Okay.
Okay, I called you about 2 weeks ago when you were talking about the Masonic. You know, you were touching on the Masonic situation, and I told you I was a master mason. And it was actually at the end of the call, so I wasn't able to elaborate and give no insight of what was being done. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to go into that since you were actually on the topic. What do you think?
We were going into the negative, and I remember how.
You're right. And
yes.
I was the last person that called, and I said, I'll call back again, but last Monday night got away.
Some occult members within the Freemason groups are liaisons to maybe fleece the energy from people or interact with ley lines and perform rituals and ceremonies. Yes, I remember that.
That is perfect. Let me just touch a few things, and I'm going to give it straight to you. The most thing about the Mason, especially those are in the lowest degree. We're not talking about the 32nd degree, the great grandmasters of the lodges. We're speaking about those, and the most thing the Masons are about is making men better men. But however, there's two important tenets about Masonic laws. One is interjected into the language that one uses. The language, the English language, as you will know, has most of the derivative concepts from the Greeks. You're familiar with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in order for us to comprehend the English language, notice I didn't use the word understand. I use the word comprehend. Understanding and comprehension is two different words.
Yes.
But however, what we are Masons are really supposed to do, we talk operative Mason and speculative Masons. We are building what is called cart. But the cart is based on logic, the words that you use. And what has happened to us, whether we are from Africa or from Europe or from whatever we came from, we have lost the language. And we have been given a language that is a pin-up language that's called the English language. Those of us who speak it, especially in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
And that language has confounded the very essence of our existence as human beings.
Mm.
Because, for instance, if one was to study the Catholic Church, you'll see the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, excluding Martin Luther, really got away because of one particular word, the word virgin, which we call immaculate conception. But if one was to go back, I'm just going to give you a background. I'm not going to get into the subject really much. I'm just give you the etymology of words and how we can incorporate these words into our mind and change the way we look and the way we think.
That's what I was actually going to ask you. Why is it that you want to convey this information and you just described it? It changes the way you think.
Right, because the problem is today in today's society, we don't understand, we must comprehend. Because most of us don't understand. We understand because we are below that which is above us. Understand. Those are two different words. But the word world means time, aeons, dispensation. So we have found ourselves in a dispensation equal to that of the Dark Ages that Europe, if I want to use the word Europe, I don't want to use it really, but I'll use it because the word Europe is a mystical word. It came from the word Europe, a lady. But we're not going to get into these things. However,
it gets deep, doesn't it?
In order for us to come back to human consciousness, we must first assert the linguistical connotation that creates logic. And as the Masons, we are taught two important tenets in life, mathematics and logic. Mathematics is based on a very architectural comprehension of the entire world. If you get into a car, everything in a car is based on numbers. If you do mathematics, every part of mathematics is actually formulas. And it doesn't matter where the question is asked. Once you understand the formula, then you know that the question is going to be predictable. In the language also, once you begin to understand the etymology of a word, for instance, I always start my conversation when I have with people, I ask them, can you change the world? Most people will say no. So I will say to them, you didn't comprehend the word, what I asked you. What you happened to heard was words that make you paint a picture in your mind and give you a preconceived notions about something that's really an illusion. Because I ask you, can you change the world? Now, if I were to say to you, the word world means aeon time, and I can give you a couple examples of people that change the time. And one thing I would also like to say, and it's going to sound funny, but all the people who are listening to this program right now that go to any church organization, you're listening to a preacher. Most of them, 95%, are Master Mason. They have to be that in order to be able to comprehend what was written in the Codex that became the King James Version of the Codex that was before him.
Now, that's more interesting to me. That really cuts to it. A lot of theologians they have to learn the whole spectrum of various religions,
right.
including being a Master Mason or a Freemason and into that realm.
Right. And what has happened is because we have been deprived of the real etymology of the language that we are using that is not really our language, we cannot comprehend the very limitedness of our psyche, because we are using limited words that really does not express the very essence of who we are.
Got it, sir. No, we're just going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. I just want to add to that, there are many forms of language, and we have body language, telepathy, all of that. A lot of communication is going on between people. It's not primary. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, great. I was listening to... Hello, by the way. I'm enjoying the show. I was listening to Mr. Wilde, and it was very interesting because just a couple of nights ago, I thought that was very interesting what he said about Aluna with the spirit world in South America, because they also have... They say soñadores, that people that use dreams to do everything. So the other night I had a very, like an odd dream, because and it was that this kind of, I don't know, diaphanous black entity was following me, and I was a little afraid, but I turned around and I said, oh yeah, I'm not afraid of you, and I like attacked it. I didn't attack it, I confronted it. So, I mean, you know, shadow notwithstanding, I realized that what Mr. Wilde said about these, you know, demonic entities and the clunkers and the half-man, half-goats and the UFOs, I said, you know, that kind of makes sense because it seems like there is that kind of stuff out there. And I was very kind of, you know, I'm not like the most courageous person, but I was surprised that I actually like went and confronted it, you know?
That's a really good point, and I've heard that if, you know, the fear is what some of these entities feed on, but when you shift to anger, I think that's when you catch these things off balance.
Well, I don't know if it was anger. It was just like, oh, yeah? It was like that kind of thing because I've had these kind of approaches before, you know, and I said, like, you know, and I realized that that's what they do. They feed off of your fear.
Mm-hmm.
And banish them by not being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And courage does not mean not being afraid. Courage means being afraid and going for it.
And that's what you did. You often hear the stories of these amorphous black things floating or in a corner of a room, even in the conscious state. But this was in a dream state. Very interesting.
Yes, and so I was very, very happy to hear Mr. Wilde, because it really clarified a lot for me, and I felt really good about it because I've always been, you know, really trying to be on the front there, trying to do the work that we're trying to do to make things better for everybody.
Yeah, he's quite remarkable. He's able to see into the etheric realm in a conscious state, which I don't know if I'm ready for anything like that, but I certainly wouldn't mind learning how to do it.
Well, I don't know if I was ready for it, but it kind of came to me, you know, so it was good to have an explanation, and I congratulate you and commend you on your work also, sir.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, what we're really trying to connect here is going back to what Matthew Deluz was talking about last week with how human emotional energy is sort of siphoned off planet, and Well, Stuart Wilde writes about how to hold on to it, you know?
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, how you doing, Jeff? It's Ed from Jamaica.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. I really wish Mr. Wilde could have took some questions, but just 2 points. I mean, I don't really see what is the difference in his philosophy from the great teachers like Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad. I mean, Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, the meek shall inherit the earth, the first shall be last. Buddha talked about the humbleness of life and how in giving one receives power, and to the true expression of power is the ability to humble yourself before others, mm-hmm. you know, to wash others' mm-hmm. feet.
Okay, so, you don't see the difference. Okay, what's your next point?
My next point is, I mean, the human mind is a complicated instrument, and I've seen people delude themselves. You understand what I'm saying? You can conjure your mind into thinking that you're seeing things that are not there, and it's happened to me.
Are you suggesting that this is what people are doing? When they talk about shadow people, demons, UFOs, things like that, is that what you're suggesting?
That's some, yes.
That may be the case with some people you know or yourself. It's not the case in the absolute.
Well, there's no physical evidence. There hasn't been any credible physical
evidence. I know, and you come in to the shows, and this is what you hit every time. There's no you want physical evidence. The world is not made up that way, where you can have physical evidence all the time. People have experiences. They're fleeting, ephemeral.
Well,
you're not always going to get physical evidence.
My background is based in science, and unless there's some type of tangible physical proof, then it's always subject to conjecture.
That's a lonely road. That's a lonely road.
Well, hey, that's just me, babe. Have a good one.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Jeff. It's Antonio.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. It's noisy. I'm out in the street again. I would like to ask Mr. Wilde, recount my story with that shadow being that I saw in Astoria Park about a year ago. My question to you, and maybe you can get it over to him and you can give us an update.
Oh, if that's the case, I recommend other listeners want to do that. If you email me in othernewsradio@yahoo.com, I'll forward it right to him his assistant.
Okay, well, let me know what you think right now.
Okay.
Do you think there's people like Mr. Wilde that the ruling class or the ruling elite or the corporations use to counsel and to use their talents in these areas?
Without a doubt.
Do you know? Yeah, that would be a great show. You got to have this guy here for like a day, and you know, he does a whole teaching. That would be great.
To be able to, understand what he's talking about. You can look online and see, I guess, where he's teaching and where his seminars are at. And
I'll do that.
That's what he's doing right now. He'd be with us, but he's very busy.
Well, I'll say this last thing. He said a lot of things. I could say this. I stand for a lot of things he said, and I strive, and I try to make a difference for myself so that I can make a difference. I'm actually doing some of the things he's saying, and that's not to be cocky or anything. It's just so many people call and say, hey, you should do this, and we should do that. It's like, I think that we're all waiting. A lot of people are waiting for a leader. There's been many, and they've gone, and some people have been killed. I think you got to just do this yourself, and you make a difference.
I agree. Yeah, thank you, Antonio.
Thank you, Jeff.
I agree. We have another call.
My name is John Mann. I just want to make a comment for those who are searching spiritual maturity, and for those who may even doubt the creator of all, that the evidence of the unseen world is the fact that we breathe air. Air is the common denominator that there's the connection to the unseen. And by our spirits needing a fleshy suit for Earth, which is also a unseen spark, the connection between the oxygen, which is unseen, and the spirit, which is unseen, that's contained in this fleshy suit that we utilize for Earth for this particular plane, is the connection. Whereas doesn't supernova and burn this particular fleshy suit out, where we're eight, the spirit is able to experience certain experiences that it may yearn for or may just needs to experience beyond its own will or desire.
I think you're right on with that. And remember what Stuart was saying, that not everybody has to see the etheric body or be able to, you know, perceive that realm. But in this book, Silent Power, the beginning of it is to stop seeking approval. Don't require things from people. Stop leaning emotionally and physically. And connecting back to what Matthew Deleuze was talking about, I think these are the first steps to begin to hold on to your power. You won't allow the energy to be taken from you.
Okay, thank you. In other words, take ownership of your own spirit.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. That's going to do it for us this evening. If you have additional questions or comments for Stuart Wild, again, you can send me an email and I'll forward it to his assistant at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com. See you next week, 10 p.m.